Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, October 17th, 2014. And on today's podcast, we're going to discuss the protest movement in Hong Kong that has been ongoing now for several weeks. What changes will it bring to Hong Kong and to China? The protests begun and led by students bring to our minds other social movements, student-led in recent years. Each student movement is, of course, unique, but the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests seem similar to Hong Kong because obviously it involved China proper. We all remember the scene, now an iconic one, of the lone man we call Tank Man standing in front of a long line of Chinese tanks. Some student movements fail, as did Tiananmen Square, but others reflect generational and societal change, such as the 1979 Iranian Revolution, brought about primarily by students who stormed the American Embassy in Tehran and united society in support of their revolution. By doing so, the United States experienced profound generational shifts in its society and government through the student protests of the 1960s and early 70s. These protests brought down a president. And if they did not end the Vietnam War, I would argue, they at least ended the draft. They introduced a new generation that challenged policy, and now the same generation sets its own policy. Students are, by definition, intellectually involved in society. Their protest movements reflect one very important way for the ruled to rise up against the rulers. They often galvanize the other areas of society, as the Iranians did and as the Americans eventually did. They are the frontline troops of a generational shift in society, much like the fault lines that lie below the earth, just waiting for an earthquake. The students are part of longer-term social, cultural, and political change. And when their protests die out and disappear, the students are still there, and they become part of a generation that retains the same ideas they had as students. Hong Kong was a semi-independent city-state and a British colony until it reverted to the control of mainland China in 1997. China agreed to allow Hong Kong to keep its semi-independent status, and the motto became "One Country, Two Systems." Hong Kong has always been characterized as a vibrant, economically liberal society, coupled or anchored by the rule of law. That just means that, number one, the law applies equally to all, and number two, private property was protected by law so that investment could pour into Hong Kong, secure that it would be protected by law. If a foreigner, for example, bought property, it would remain his, and the government would not nationalize it or steal it. That, coupled with no income tax, made Hong Kong one of the most dynamic and economically free places on earth. When the Chinese took control in 1997, the same conditions remained for about a decade. Then conditions started to change. For one thing, China proper changed economically. A more liberal free market was adopted in much of China, and foreign money poured in to build huge manufacturing centers and to employ large numbers of people. From that grew the great cities of China and the great financial centers in direct competition with Hong Kong. Hong Kong has not had manufacturing there since the 1970s. They don't have room for it. Concentrating, they were instead on trade and finance. Now that trade and finance has started to slip away to China proper. It has always served China's export and financial link to the world, Hong Kong, that is. But now China proper has its own export and finance system. Coupled with all that is a growing, massive shift in income disparity as the middle class is disappearing due to the extreme increase in housing costs and the cost of living. This was caused by an influx of billions and billions of dollars and many wealthy Chinese investors who bought Hong Kong property. And there is no more property. Hong Kong is a small place. The last straw was the Chinese government deciding that it would have the right to approve candidates in Hong Kong's elections. So, no housing for the people, no jobs for the people, and now no democracy. The students took to the street. 29 banks were forced to shut down. So much retail commerce was lost that estimates are up to $45 billion, U.S. dollars that is, went away in a couple of weeks. One-sixth of the Hong Kong yearly GDP was lost. The Chinese gassed these students, did everything but send in troops. But now the two sides are talking and they are negotiating. Finally, folks, what will be the result of all this? What is the future of Hong Kong? Well, it looks grim to me right now. I hope I'm wrong. God bless the students, though. The ruled rise up against the rulers. Perhaps it's time here in America that we had another student uprising. At least that's the way I see it. Until next time, folks, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.